This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Intel and AMD are duking it out on their way to many core. Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for December 4th, 2009, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and we have with us once again Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360. Good morning, Addison.
Hey, Michael, how's it going?
Pretty good. Well, we do have a couple of interesting topics to talk about this week, but it seems like we're in a little bit of a lull between Thanksgiving and Christmas news-wise. It looks like the vendors are already in holiday mode to a certain extent. Are you kind of noticing the same thing?
From a PR perspective, I think that's true. It's not necessarily the best time to go out with a news release. I think the vendors that had news teed it up to go before supercomputing. So you probably are seeing that. From an analyst perspective, we're actually extremely busy because we're not only following up on everything we saw at supercomputing, but now is an intense time for vendors to go into planning mode for 2010. So not only on the research side are we busy, but there's a lot of follow-up from supercomputing. So if there's a lull, I'm not in it. But, I can see where you're seeing that on the news side. You did find a couple of interesting things to talk about, though, with Intel and AMD.
Right. In fact, one of the topics is something I just missed before SC09. They had AMD had its financial analyst day on November 11th, where the company sort of laid out its two-year product roadmap across all its market segments. Now, this year, AMD focused a lot more on the client-side products. There was quite a bit of emphasis on this fusion chip strategy where they're going to put CPU and GPUs on the same die. But they also
heard that theme elsewhere before, right?
Right. We've talked about it a lot. We've seen other companies play around with that concept, too. But I think probably AMD is sort of the furthest along in this strategy, I think, because they've got sort of the best balanced technology right now. They're basically the only company that has an established CPU and GPU base to play with. But they also talked about their Opteron processors, their server roadmap, and a lot of it was old news. We all know that the 45-nanometer Magna Cores processors coming out in early 2010. Of course, Cray and Apro and others have been talking about how they're going to put those processes into their next generation platforms. That's the 6000th series that the Opterons are starting up in first quarter of 2010. So they talked about those to a certain extent, but they also revealed some 2011 news in their Bulldozer processor family that has a little bit of a different architecture where they're going to work their way up into 12 and then 16 core processors using a slightly different design. And that was rather interesting. But again, most of the rest of that analyst day was about their GPU-CPU fusion technology and something they're called their APU strategy, which I think is accelerated processing units, which they're going to introduce the first versions in 2011. Unfortunately if you're an HPC person, it doesn't relate strongly to us because most of those first chips are going to be on the client side. They're going to put them into notebooks and desktops and maybe even some mobile platforms. Their strategy here doesn't even look like it's going to hit the server roadmap until maybe 2012, where, I just noticed on one of their slides they had heterogeneous computing, time frame after 2012. So we're not really holding our breath to see GPUs and CPUs in a server for a while, I guess. But, they could surprise us. They've got their, as far as I know, they're continuing their Firestream discrete GPU technology for HPC, but it doesn't look like they're doing anything more aggressive on the CPU-GPU side for the time being.
Well, let's focus for a second on these multiple cores then, because that seems to be the path for HPC. It's not surprising that you go to an AMD analyst day, and most of it's on consumer or client markets, but this path to multiple cores, this is really the where the bulk of the race is in development for HPC between AMD and Intel.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, everybody's kicking up their core count. I mean, we're going to talk about it in a second that Intel is certainly on their way, but right. AMD is definitely, their core count is basically doubled on their MagniCore products from Shanghai and Istanbul from 4 and 6 to now 8 and 12. And then Interlagos, their 2011 Bulldozer chip will be 12 and 16 cores.
Well, bring us up to speed on the Intel story, too. And I think we're going to wind up talking about these together. I think it's hard to separate them out because you got a big many-core Intel chip also in the news, right?
Right. They demonstrated this. Now, this is just an experimental chip, but they demonstrated it this week. It's a 48-core x86 processor that they launched and they started talking about. Now, it's not a server core they're talking about. I think they took one of their smaller x86, their core technologies, with something they'll put on a desktop or a mobile, but they're actually calling it a single chip cloud computer, which I don't like at all. I'm not sure why they picked that name, but that's what they're calling it.
It has nothing to do with cloud.
Yeah, it's basically a bunch of dual core tiles or processing units hooked up with an on chip network, and there's routers on each of these tiles that hooks it up, and it's a high band on chip network, and it's kind of cool. I mean, they have hardware support for message passing, but there's also another strategy where you can just use kind of shared memory. So it's like, you know, an SMP on a chip or a cluster on a chip, however you want to sort of use this. And it's for people to experiment with. So they're going to hand out like several dozen of these chips to partners and just external academic and research groups to play with to develop and research software models and applications on. With the idea that, you know, this is the way they're headed. They're going to put more and more cores on these chips. It's going to be integrated into all of Intel's platforms at some point, but this is the way they're going.
Yeah, well, and that's actually the trend I wanted to point out here is as we go to more and more cores, without a change in programming model, what we're really developing is we're in a place now where we really look at these as SMPs that are on a socket, and then as we go to higher core counts, you can think of them either as NUMAs or as SMPs, depending on the or rather as MPPs, depending on the number of cores. But I've spoken to at least one user who's talking about the bringing back their SMP codes and running those on the socket with an MPI layer on top. You know, users are trying to figure out what optimizations they have in their arsenals for making use of all these cores, because just running MPI over the whole thing, it's getting to where that's not optimal. You got to find some kind of hybrid programming model to go along with the tiering layers of parallelism that you have now. You've got parallelism on the switch. You've got parallelism on the socket. You've got that you're trying to deal with in getting your applications to run efficiently.
Right, exactly. I mean, the nice thing about these many-core chips is you'll be able to run MPI codes on the chips as well, because there's a whole number of ways to do that. So so you're right. You're going to have that choice on the chip to either run sort of these global shared memory SMP-type applications on chip or MPI, and then distribute it with more classic MPI across different nodes. So I think we're sort of seeing this sort of, like you said, this different tiers of parallelism work. We're certainly seeing on-chip parallelism go way up, and then the software is going to have to adapt to that and take advantage of that recently, because there's a lot to take advantage of the fact that you don't need to go through switches anymore to get through your parallelism.
Yeah, and I think this is a transition that the industry is still facing. That this is not something that users have really been forced to cope with yet, is how to fully make that transition. In the near term, the installed base is still, mostly dual core and even single core. There's not even that much quad core out in the installed base yet. And in the dual core world, people are compensating by adding more memory and just trying whenever they can to put individual jobs perhaps an individual course. But, you know, you get so used to looking at these roadmaps that you lose sight of the fact that 40% of the HPC installed base is still single core, right? It takes a while to replace all of those systems that are out there. Now, those aren't the systems that have been installed in the last year and a half.
Right.
Those are all dual and quad core, but these systems have relatively long lifespans. We're just now publishing our newest site census report specifically focusing on processors, and you can map in that data the transition in number of cores on the socket by architecture type. Look at how many processors per node, how many cores per processor in the different architectures, and you can see how much of that is still waiting to transition. And as we get to these 4-core, 8-core, 16-core systems, that's going to be a challenge for application optimization that we haven't had to deal with yet.
Right, but yeah, everybody knew this was coming. So, I mean, if applications are sitting there, you know, thinking they're going to go with single cores forever, I mean, that obviously was going to be a fallacy. So, I mean, the whole idea behind what Intel is doing now with this experimental chip is to sort of get these chips in the hands of people who can experiment with them and start to develop these software models that everybody can start using. But on-chip parallelism is obviously coming. Everybody's known about this for at least, 5 years now. Some legacy codes might not make it, but if those legacy codes don't make it to those new models, they'll just be, you know, sort of stuck on old hardware. But certainly new applications and applications that have legs that need to be ported will make that effort to change those models or change the structure of the code so it takes advantage of the new hardware.
Yeah, it's just that this isn't the only trend that ISVs are dealing with, right? Yeah, they've known this is coming, but they're also dealing with the fragmentation of Linux into multiple kernels and distributions and chipsets. There's Windows coming online that people are asking for versions of that code. They're looking at accelerators, which are also shown up in our site census. People using accelerators of different types, and you've got just regular scalability and bug fix issues. So if you're an ISV with limited resources, it's a question of how many of these things do you want to be working on at a given time. It's a hard problem for them right now.
Right. Although, you know, if I think if you're a technical computing ISV, if you're a scientific code ISV, you've got to love this because, you know, they're loving the workstation model that where you have multiple processors on a node. Now you've got that same power on a chip. So there, it's also an automatic. So if you're like an Ansys or an MS Nastran or some of these guys that we deal with that, you know, sort of have this uneasy relationship of moving to a server model, they're going to love these SMP chips. I mean,
That I certainly agree with in that integrated workstation form factor because it gives them the ability to help someone step up into HPC while also addressing the licensing issue of saying, I'm going to have this licensing price for these models of computers and ease that transition for people into HPC. So that I certainly agree with. But let's go back to the AMD versus Intel for a second. You're looking at both of these roadmaps coming forward, and you know you were making some comments on whether you think AMD has the stuff to catch up to Intel again in the HPC arena.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have rather similar commercial roadmaps right now on the server side as far as like numbers of cores and sort of the general architecture of what they're providing on a server chip. But the problem is Intel is like 6 to 12 months ahead of them in process technology. So when AMD's on 45, which they just sort of started, 45 nanometer, you know, Intel's is going to be on 32 nanometer. Very, very soon, and that gives them sort of this big built-in, you know, performance boost that is not symmetrical. And if they're going to retain that gap of 6 to 12 months, AMD is always going to be trying to catch up, unless they can come up with some innovative, you know, system engineering that levels the playing field somehow. But for the time being, I don't see that happening. I think AMD is going to be playing catch up on the process technology, and therefore sort of playing catch up on performance. And just trying to keep up with what Intel is putting out there.
Yeah, and you're right, they are playing catch-up. That's another thing that we're, of course, looking at in this research that we're publishing is what are the relative shares of Intel and AMD. AMD processors and others that aren't Intel and AMD, of course. And what we've seen is that although AMD did have a lead with Opteron for a little while, that Intel has really recaptured its dominance of the HPC market. We've got the shares of that in systems that have been shipping in 2007, 2008, into the start of 2009. And also that Intel seems to be doing better than that in systems with lower chip counts or core counts. When you get up to the very highest end of supercomputing, there it's a little more equal between Intel and AMD.
Right.
But Intel is certainly in the volume portion of the market and in HPC as a whole, winning that share war for the time being. Now, we've said also over and over again that that can change really fast. If AMD is hitting its marks and Intel has a few misses, then it'll flip back. Price performance is king here.
Right.
But now you're counting on Intel to have a misstep again. It's which happened before with early Itaniums and Merced. But you're sitting back and waiting for Peyton Manning threw an interception in the first half, and we're hoping he's going to throw another one in the second half, and that's the key to our comeback, right?
Right. I don't think you can count on your competition failing. You've got to execute, and AMD has been executing of late. So if they continue to do that and they can demonstrate price performance, that'll certainly help their cause.
Yep.
I mean, the wild card here in HPC is this accelerator trend and GPUs in particular. If people start building a lot of these systems with accelerators, the CPU just becomes sort of the driver for that, and sort of their performance becomes less important. And I'm not sure to what extent that's going to happen in the next couple of years, but I think it's going to happen to a certain extent. And in that case, AMD might get a needed sort of leveling of the playing field, because the difference between an Opteron and a Xeon as a driver for an accelerator isn't very much.
Right.
So if we see that happening, I think that's sort of an interesting twist that we're seeing happening. If there wasn't anything as GPUs, we would just see it head to head. But I think there's a little more complexity in the market now, and Opterons and Xeons don't always have to match up one for one if you've got these other technologies as part of your performance platform.
No, I think that's true, and that you're pointing out there's one wild card there. I think there is one other wild card in the market, which is the FTC probe of Intel, which is now widening. Well, no, seriously, this can be a significant distraction. You're talking about hoping for a misstep among your competition and the leader, and that's just now been expanded to include NVIDIA in the probe, which is only noteworthy because you and I were talking a couple months ago about how we thought this was going to happen, that NVIDIA is going to be brought in, and it's a question of whether Intel's chipset agreements with Intel Intel's chipset agreements with NVIDIA apply to Nehalem, and NVIDIA is claiming they're being frozen out of that, with Intel preparing to incorporate its own graphics chips, and NVIDIA is claiming that's an unfair practice. So we kind of saw this coming. It is here. It's yet to be seen how much of a distraction it is for Intel, but the FTC is out there lurking around.
Yeah, we definitely saw it coming. I mean, NVIDIA feels it's been wronged here because AMD's bundles its own integrated graphics chips with its CPUs on a lot of its platforms now. And
you mean Intel or AMD?
Intel has integrated graphics on its own platform. So I say AMD. Yeah. So NVIDIA gets and now they're sort of preventing NVIDIA from coming into the market with their discrete platform. So NVIDIA's crying foul, obviously. And yeah, this is going to be a bit of a distraction for Intel. Maybe it's one reason Intel decided to settle with AMD on the other suit just a couple weeks ago. But yeah, Intel doesn't seem to be able to keep its head out of the controversy here. But I think that'll play out. NVIDIA's probably got a decent case there. And from what we've seen, government agencies haven't looked too favorably on this kind of sort of monopoly type behavior. So,
well, you know, it's not illegal to be a monopoly. It's illegal to abuse monopoly power in a way that hurts market forces. And the deal with NVIDIA strikes me as different than what the EU was looking into between Intel and AMD. And this is coming from the standpoint of a non-lawyer. But the issue with Intel and AMD and the EU probe had to do with monopoly power in pricing. And whereas with NVIDIA, it strikes me that this is a question of product tying, which is what Microsoft got into with the FTC with Internet Explorer a few years ago, right? Was the bundling of Internet Explorer illegally tying a separate product to Windows and forcing people to use that instead of a separate product? Or could Microsoft claim that the web browsing functionality isn't a separate product? It's a feature of our operating environment that we're providing. And that's an argument that they eventually won. Intel is going to be facing the same thing with NVIDIA. Are these graphics capabilities and these chipsets separate products that they're illegally tying, or are they features of the Intel chips that Intel is developing? And that's going to, I believe, be the crux of the argument going forward. I might get proven wrong on that, but that's where the similarity strikes me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a lawyer as well. I think where NVIDIA's complaining is that they're unfairly bundling these things as far as how they're offering them to vendors that basically locks NVIDIA out. But I think NVIDIA, you know, despite how this plays out, has a, you know, more fundamental problem as we see AMD and Intel sort of bring the GPUs and CPUs closer together. I mean, right now AMD is going to do that in a couple of years in a very explicit way, and Intel's planning to do it, I think, as well in Sandy Bridge technology. They're going to bring their integrated graphics on board to their CPU dies, but NVIDIA can't do that. It doesn't have CPUs, so it's got to figure out a way on if there's a strategy for it to get closer to CPUs, and even if this, you know, problem with Intel is resolved, it still has to sort of fight this business structure where you have sort of two competitors that don't have your best interest in hearts, but you need to sort of drive your discrete, you know, graphics chips. So if you want to compete with them on the level that of integration that they're both moving towards, you're going to have to make a move yourself, I think, independent of your two competitors.
Yep, excellent point. Excellent point. Well, we'll keep watching these trends, but I think we did find something interesting to talk about in your so-called lull between Thanksgiving and Christmas. But it's you know, Intel versus AMD is one of these perennial stories that's always going to be entertaining.
It is. And we just got a couple more weeks until we sort of take our midweek break, but we still got two more weeks of sound bites, and then we wrap it up. And hopefully we'll see some interesting news and maybe some interesting sort of end of the year announcements coming up. We'll see
what happens, Michael.
All right, it was good talking to you, Addison. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.